All right, in this hour, we want to talk about something that sometimes I'm afraid gets assumed or ignored altogether. Marriage is a huge part of counseling. It's a huge percentage of the counseling we do at the church. But I think too often we just jump right in with communication, roles, disappointments, hurts, finances, sex, parenting. There's a place for all of that. But I think there's something that needs to be discussed that would make a huge difference, regardless of what the other struggles are. And that's what I want to talk about in this hour. We need to think about what, just like if you've been doing this a while, you're track four, so right, you're doing this. Don't you find that even if they're proclaiming Christians, they don't understand the right goal of life? It's to please God. Not fix them, not rearrange my circumstances, please God. And you have to harp on that. You start with it, if you're like I am, and then you end up coming back to it several times now and say, wait a minute, remember what our goal is, 2 Corinthians 5:9, therefore we make it our aim, whether not based on what they're doing or not doing, but you have to just keep coming back to it. I think this whole issue of marriage is the same way. Christians do not understand the purpose of marriage. And God tells us what it is. There's a purpose. He had something in mind. God did not design it, give it to us, and hope we would figure it out. Or leave us to use it any way we wanted to use it. But we've got Christians trying to get marriage to do for them what God never designed it to do. And so you can work all day long, you know, with books like His Needs, Her Needs, to say, if she would just do this more, if she'd do this more. And there's a place for some of that. But often there's a bigger problem. He needs too much. She needs too much. And they're trying to make marriage do something it wasn't designed to do. And they don't even have the right goal and purpose. This marriage was designed to glorify God. And to put something on display in this world that our world desperately needs to see. I'm not totally against books like His Needs, Her Needs, and Men Are From Mars. There's some truth in all that. I mean, you read those books and often you'll say, yes, that's exactly how I feel. Yes, that's what I want. But that's not the answer. When you use those kind of books, all you've done sometimes is make it worse. Because now she was like, I didn't think he knew what my needs were. So I gave him a little bit of a grace card. Now he went through that book. Doggone it, he knows it. And he's still not doing it. Right? Way back when our marriage was bad, it was what women wish men knew about wives. Dobson. Yellow book, I still remember. Because my wife bought it and laid it on the coffee table, and it ticked me off. That's what that did. That's all that did. Ticked me off. I mean, it made a bold statement, right? You're the problem. And as soon as you figure out what it is that I want, I need, this marriage. And I didn't know enough about books at the time. I thought, well, where's that man book? Let me find it. And I'll lay that on the coffee table, on top of your little yellow book. Because then all you end up doing is playing that game, right? Here's what he wants, here's what she wants. Who goes first? Well, I'll do more of what he wants when he's doing more of what I want. Well, no, I'll do more of what she wants. But you're still at a stalemate because both are still focused on me. So all those books have some insights about what husbands and wives value most and want most, but none of them usually touch on the real purpose or address the real purpose in marriage. There's someone else that matters far more than the husband or the wife. What does God want? What does God want? Marriage is something really special. There's no other relationship, not girlfriend, not guys that served in a war together, not mother-daughter, not father-son. There's no other relationship that God calls one flesh. It is very special. There's no other relationship that the Bible says was designed to put on display Jesus and his bride, the church. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal getting this right, and it's a big deal keeping it alive, which I think is why Satan goes after it so much. Sure, he wrecks friendships between guys. Sure, he wrecks relationships in a small group of church. Sure, he wrecks sometimes relationships with girlfriends. But have you noticed how often he destroys marriage? There's a reason. That That relationship had a purpose to be a little sermon, just a little sermon that puts on the stage for our world to see, not perfectly, but just get a taste or a glimpse of Jesus Christ and his love for his bride. And so our enemy goes after it. So among everything else that you may do trying to help people with marriage, don't hear me saying this is the only thing to talk to them about. Since you're level four, I assume you've got all kinds of great ways that you come at some of that other stuff. I'm just bringing this to you and saying, do you ever talk about this? Do you ever feel the need to back it up sometimes? Almost like a football coach in the locker room with the guys when they've really lost sight of what's going on. He just holds up a football and says, man, this is a football. And isn't it always interesting? I don't waste my time with the after-game interviews because they say the same thing all the time. We got to get back to the basics of tackling and executing. We got to execute. We got to execute. Yes, everybody says that. That's why you lost. The basics of tackling. In marriage, it's the same way, but no one's talking about it. We've got to get back to, why did God give us marriage? Are you trying to make it do something it was never designed to do? So number one, marriage was designed to be a picture of the relationship between Christ and his bride, the church. Now you may say, I know that. I hope you know that. But the average pew packer does not know that. Just like they don't know that our real goal in life should be to please him, whether absent or present, to be well-pleasing to him. The average Christian attending a church thinks, I got saved, I'm a Christian now, and the only difference is I still want what I want in my marriage, and Jesus is here to help me get it, because I can pray to Jesus to change him or to change her. Same agenda, but Jesus is helping me go after it. There should be a new goal, a new purpose, an ability to let up some on what you thought you had to have. In other words, this marriage has to be about something bigger than just what the husband wants or the wife wants. Jesus Christ has to be on center stage. I think it's interesting. We fall into the trap. I'm guilty of it. I'll catch myself and bring myself back of still trying to counsel in isolation, apart from the context of Jesus and the gospel. But when Paul and other Bible writers would write to us about practical things, they almost always frame it up within the context of Jesus and the gospel. And so as you counsel, we need to bring them the insights, but bring it within the context of Jesus and the gospel. Like, for instance, I just preached on giving. All right, we need our people to give. They need to know they're supposed to give. You think they do. You know that whole little phrase, when Jesus gets their heart, he gets their wallet. No, he doesn't. They have to be taught, believe it or not. He gets some wallets, but not all of them. You know, like some of you maybe heard, I'm thrilled. Those of you who don't know, my oldest son got saved. 2000. So, you know, after some of you have heard us talk a long time, my 28-year-old son got radically, dramatically throw you to the ground, Saul of Tarsus, saved. And it is so exciting. And it's what God did. Now, I didn't have him in a headlock, and I didn't draw one more diagram. And he's just like, oh, if you want to hear his testimony, just Google Harrison Bigney baptism testimony. So he gave a 22-minute, 5-minute baptism testimony. It's supposed to be 5. He took 22. The apple didn't fall far from the tree. I told the worship guy, I said, just cut some songs, because any way you slice it, he's going 20 minutes at least. But it was so good. It was so good. And so we thank God. But here's what's so funny. So I preached these two messages on giving from 2 Corinthians 8, 2 Corinthians 9. If you know anything about those chapters, it is full of Jesus and the gospel. So you give in light of him being such a gracious giver and lavish giver to us. And we're his followers, and he's changed our lives, and so we give. He doesn't just say, just give. In fact, he sticks the whole landing in the last verse of chapter 9 by saying, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. Talking about Jesus. So I do these messages, and Harrison's at one of our other campuses, but he came by for lunch that day, and he came in and was like, Dad, great message. He's like, and so I tried to make it practical. On the back of the bulletin, I had this chart that showed cars. Here's how many cars are given nothing. A lot of cars, way too many cars, big herd of cars. Here's how many